Bright Lights Pathfinders. We are all a bright light searching for the Pathfinder's way. Hello, I'm Kathy Cook, and I'm your host on Thursday evenings at 6 o'clock Pacific Time. That's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So listen up and tune in to Station 1 on BBSRadio.com. It's a positive power production. Unique perfection evolves. Exquisite feelings awaken, producing passion style.
Hello, we're on the air. And tonight is John DeBoer. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you doing, Kathy?
Oh, it's so great to hear you. We're going to play, do you want to tell them what we're going to play, the music, which piece we chose?
The Creator's Voice.
Yeah. Don, would you go on and play that for us? Tell me a little bit about the Creator's Voice, John.
Well, this is a song that's on the In the Spirit album. And it's a very spiritual song. I use it as a piece that I play the sunset to. It's a song Well, the In the Spirit album is a very spiritual album. Of course, it was called In the Spirit, and it also has Amazing Grace and Taps, and it has Loons in the Moonlight, and it has a lot of very spiritual, very, very spiritual-based sounding songs. And there's, of the trilogy, there's Flute Songs for a Blue Moon, which is the first album of the trilogy, and it's kind of like a nature album. It has a lot of, you know, like the falls and the whistling winter wind. And then In the Spirit's like a very spiritual album. It has things like the Creator's Voice and, you know, the Amazing Grace and things like that. And then the third album in the trilogy is Music from the Shadowlands, which is kind of like, it has The Bear and Cry for a Vision, which has wolves and things in it. So it's kind of like the dark side, if you must. So it's evening song, if you must. And
Oh, John. You know, in the book that you just completed, The Storyteller's Flute,
yeah,
I was reading on page 39.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the Creator's Voice.
Oh.
And it was talking about a young woman who was in the back of the church and how she felt like she heard the Creator's Voice. And then you walk in to the church to play your music, and she was in a wheelchair. And you were telling the story, and she didn't realize that you were on the sidewalk playing the music at the time.
Yeah,
on the flute.
Yeah,
that's such a touching story. I received the book that is at the different bookstores now. It's called The Storyteller's Flute of Petrology by John DeBoer, Spirit of Thunder. I tell you, it is so beautifully illustrated, as well as each of the stories that go along with the music that's in each one of the CDs as well. Tell me a little bit about the sacred waterfalls, as well as the, there's just so many things I want to ask you. Gosh, I don't even know where to begin, John. I'm going to have to let you just start.
But you were talking about the illustrations, and the illustrations were done by Susan Nelson, and she's a wonderful artist, and she did all the illustrations specifically for this book. It's not anything that she already had done. She listened to the music, and she read the stories and actually made the illustrations for this specific book. So they are really tailored to the book, and they're just wonderful. She just did a wonderful job. I mean...
John, you know which one I'm open to? The Crystal Winter Palace.
Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful
That picture is just mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm.
Of the woman that is blowing her breath out, and her eyes are just sparkling. Though it's done in pen and ink, it looks like she's just right at us.
Yeah. The crystal winter, it makes you cold, the icicles in it and everything, yeah. Yeah, and she did a good, she did a wonderful job on every single song. She did an illustration for her, and everything from the Crystal Winter Palace to the Creator's Voice, which is playing in the background right now, I can hear it, and she just did a wonderful job.
Well, at the beginning of the book, you were talking about how everyone has their own gift, and how the woodmaker makes his wood, and he could make it into furniture or a flute, but the Creator gives us each a gift. And, it's like she touched upon your stories, and your stories come out of the flute, and then you have the people that have been so gifted to make the flute, and it's just one of the most honorable things to be able to give to the universe like that, and know your gifts that continue to grow.
Yeah, it was, there's a lot of different people that go into something, making something like this. But of course, the illustrator, and the illustrations are wonderful. And all of them were kind of sent to me, actually, if you really want to know. Again, Susan Nelson was recommended by somebody on a nature walk that I was on, and I called her up and she actually plays the flute as well. She was really into it. But and then of course the flute makers, they actually gifted me most of the flutes that I have are actually gifts from the flute makers, over $20,000 worth of Native American flutes as gifts from the makers.
Oh, John, please share about your dog and the flute. That story, please.
That's kind of a funny one.
I love it.
A lot of the songs are from, are from very, very truthful spaces and are real. Some of them are fantasy, some of them are, but the story about my dog, of course, is the flute playing dog, and one day I came home and I found one of my flutes, and the end had dog teeth all over the end of it, okay, and where he had chewed on it. But the way he had it, he actually had it in his mouth, and the teeth were going down from the mouthpiece. So while, if a Native American flute, all you have to do is blow in it, and it will make a noise. So he had his mouth all over the end of that flute, And he was actually playing the flute. So and this was when he was just a puppy. I mean, he must have been no more than 8 months, 10 months old.
But John, you've got to tell about how he would distinguish between your music being played on the CD. And then you would play your flute, and he would cock his head and go like, what? And then all of a sudden he had that flute in his mouth, and that was the cutest write-up.
He's a very musical dog. His name is Najia Zuye, which means shadow warrior in Lakota, and he's a very musical dog. And he actually, you can play flute music and all day, and he doesn't really react to it, but the minute one of my songs come on, he jumps up and looks around, and he knows that it's me.
Gorgeous.
And he is a gorgeous dog too. But
he's black and white and has that long hair and the floppy ears. He almost looks like a Shetland sheepdog would look, but not.
Yeah, well, he's actually a border collie. He's a collie.
Okay.
And he's a border collie mix, actually. I knew he was musical dog when, this is a true story too, when I first got him, he was only like, I don't know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks old, something like that. And we got him home, and he would be sitting on the bed, and the TV would be on, and he'd not be looking at the TV, not reacting, nothing. And then all of a sudden, this little girl would come on, and it was part of a commercial, and she was singing, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are." Anyway, so, and all of a sudden, he would jump up and look at the TV, and, you know, and he would cock his head, you know, and then when that commercial was over, he'd go back and lay down and not pay attention until the next time that commercial was run. And then he would jump up and look, and so he could identify the song, and I think it was something from his childhood, even younger, you know, like a little girl was singing "Twinkle Twinkle Little Star" to him, or something to put him to sleep, or something when he was a real real itty bitty baby. But he somehow, remembered the song, and somehow he could identify it every time. He wouldn't listen to the TV at all until that one commercial came on. But later on, I seen that he actually would react to my flute music the same way. He would jump up and look and cock his head, and then he'd look at me, and then he'd look at the...
He downstairs in the downstairs, and then you could hear something going,
yeah, you could actually,
like that,
when he was chewing
and
on
you found out that he had the flute.
Yeah, I had to break him up to chew the flute. But he used to actually take the flute and put it in his mouth, and then you could hear the little squeaks, and he was actually, the flute playing dog. But, you know, you could...
That was so funny.
Yeah, but
you could teach him his ABCs, because it's twinkle, twinkle, little star, A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
I think he's got a vocabulary of about 500 words.
Yeah. You know, at night I tell Puppy Whoppy, my girly whirly, yes, her is, my little dog, I say, once upon a time, there was three bears, the mama bears, the daddy bear, and when I get to the little baby puppy whoopee bear, she lays her head down. There's something else.
Well, you know,
I sent you a video of her with, and I didn't even realize your flute music was in the background, because I'm so used to it playing all mm-hmm. the time.
Well, you know, animals, dogs especially, are very dear to me in a lot of different ways. I'm kind of like a pack member, if you must.
Wolf clan.
Wolf pack, if you want to say. Because at one time I had open heart surgery, and I had you do open heart, they stop your heart for 2 hours. And so you get the you actually kind of cross over. And when I crossed over, my pack was there. There was, you know, like, you know, and they were, you know, they were kind of like wolves, but they were like real friendly and not, you know, not scary. And they were, I was like part of the pack, and they were taking care of me. And I, you know, I many, many times think that that's kind of like I have special things for dogs, and you know, I've
always had dogs. Raven, your wife was telling me that some really special visions came to you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that you went into a whole, you could hear the beating of the Mother Earth, and that a lot of different things transpired after that, during that time, as well as.
But yeah, there's a story I like to tell about I was playing. This was way after I had open heart and all the other things, and I'd went through all the cry for a vision on the latest album, Shadowland Flutesong. It's actually a song that was kind of came out of that whole thing. But nevertheless, when I was playing at actually a thing called the Butterfly Festival, I was playing along, and I noticed this very Cherokee-looking man come in at the back of the tent, and there was a bunch of people, and he was sitting way at the back. He sat down, and he crossed his arms in a very, very stoic manner, and he, you know, he's looking at me playing, and you could tell he was trying to figure out, you know, just what I was about. And I was telling my stories and playing the flute, and pretty soon I got, you know, I started getting children involved, and they were playing drums and singing songs, I seen him start to smile, and then pretty soon I seen him laugh at some of the different things, and then by the end, of course, he was, you know, I could tell he had warmed to the whole thing, and he was having a great time, and at the end of it, he walked right up to me, and this is when everybody was, I was signing albums and things, but he walked right up to me, and he stood way behind until everybody else was gone, and then when I was standing there, he walked right over to me, and he put his finger right on my chest where my scar was, and of course he couldn't see it even, but he put it right there, and then he took his finger and he put it on his chest where I could actually see the scar where he had open heart, and he said, once you've been to the other side, you bring something back with you. And I thought that was, and that was the whole thing, I think that it made me reevaluate a lot of things in life when you're you get caught up in the whole worldly thing about, you know, money
not materialistic.
All the things, you know, all the things, not just money, but, you know, relationships with things and you kind of lose something. But when you go over to the other side and you realize you're that close, all of a sudden, when you come back, you have a different set of priorities. All of a sudden, a lot of the things that were real important to you beforehand, they don't mean hardly anything at all. Okay, and so that's a true.
Well, then I can ask you a question.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve, I had severe carbon monoxide poisoning. My mother said, she took care of me. She said, my dad died of cancer. She said, I had taken care of your father. I have never seen any human being as sick as you were than your father even dying of cancer. And John, my mother said, you were talking in a foreign tongue. And you were talking of a grandfather, and I was saying, and I said, Mom, you just wouldn't understand. She says, I just know now why you have all this Native American around you, because she never understood it. And I said, And but John, I always thought that I was drawn to the Wolf Clan, but this was Eagle, White Eagles. White Eagles were everywhere.
Hmm. You know, by the way, Kathy, I want to thank you for sending flowers to my mother's funeral. As long as we're on crossing over, my mother crossed over recently, and you were so nice, and the flowers were just so wonderful.
I didn't want to bring it up, and I'm so grateful you did.
I did want to tell you that was really, really, really wonderful, and my wife really loved them too. And
she was a special woman.
Yeah, she really.
And we thank her for giving birth to you, and that was what I was so honoring, because she was so great, and the love that you wrote in that story about your mother and the Blue Eyes. Oh, I love that song. Ashley listened to it. We all listened to it. My daughter, my children. We shared it with the family, and we just had our time for your mom and you. And
I did a tribute. Tour. That was my tribute to my mom, and it was something that I did for her actually years ago. But that's another thing too. You know, one of the things about my mom was real musical, and we had a very special relationship, and she taught me most of the music that I knew when I was a child. Of course, I went up and later on got all kinds of things and went all kinds of places with it. But she was the beginning, and just as her father taught her, and just as his father taught my grandfather, my great-grandfather. So it was passed down for years and years and generations and generations. But when she crossed over, of course, when my grandfather crossed over, I still feel those people. I don't really feel that they're gone. I just feel that their spirit has crossed over and that they're still with me. And just as I feel my grandfather's still with me, and I can, you know, I actually feel them. I believe that all the spirits are around us like the air we breathe. And of course, you got to think about it like this, you know, when I cross over, where I want to be is with my daughter. I mean, that's if I have a place that I, you see what I'm saying, that of people that I could be close to, that's one of the people that I would be close to, and if the people that were surviving, I believe that energy can't be destroyed, it can be changed. The Albert Einstein theory, you can't destroy energy, you can just change it, okay? And nothing can be really destroyed, it can just be changed in its form. So I believe that. I honestly feel that, you know, that my mother's
Can I tell you something your mother and I did when she passed?
I'm sorry, I didn't...
I want to tell you a little story about your mother and I when she passed.
Okay.
My mother and I were having a rough time. We were on the out. Because of this house that I'm doing. And I mean, it was a big out. And your mother told me exactly what to say to my mother in my heart. Because I was just, you know, just really talking to God and my dad, and your mother had just passed, and I was just saying, Dad, you know, I was just talking and meditating. And she told me exactly how to talk to my mom. And my mom just snapped out of it and just came like she was a young mother again. And I don't know, John, I can't explain it. She's like the old mom I used to have a long time ago. Mm. And it's all she changed when my dad died in 2005. And she just was never the same. And it was like your mom gave, I don't want to really tell the words over the air, but it's more like she was saying that she felt half amputated off, in other words, and she just needed to feel whole by controlling me a little bit and having a little bit of say-so in what I was doing in my life, and I wasn't letting her, and she just was the control concern thing. And your mother just said she needed her hair brushed a little bit and she needed doting on a little bit, and it was just so, I don't know, it was not talking to me, but It was in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just feel the love that your mother and you had for one another. I was just kind of feeling that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, yeah, I mean, my mom and I were real close, okay? Is, you know, real, real close. And, but, you know, I basically,
it mended a lot for us, as well as making, you know, because we talked about y'all. My family knows a lot about you, though they haven't talked to you, because they have, you sent my mother a CD, remember, with the feather.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you said the one feather, remember she had the feather float down and touch her, and the white feather, right after Daddy died, and then the feather floated into her car, and then the peacock arrived right after Daddy's death, and then you and Ray, you sent my mother the CD, and it had a feather in it, and then you tell about the feather. Why don't you tell that story about the dream and the feather?
Well, that's the In the Spirit album, and the In the Spirit album. Actually, the one feather has many, many, many legends about it. At powwows, if there's an eagle feather that falls on the ground, there's legends about that it's a warrior, you know, who has fallen. I was out in the woods, and there was a feather floating down from the sky, and I caught it before it touched the ground. And it was one of my really good friends, Yellowhawk, said, I went to him and I said, well, you know, this happened to me. I caught a feather and, you know, in the air before it hit the ground. And I said, what does it mean? And he said, and he told me of many, you know, legends of the feathers. And at the end of it, he basically said, only you know what that means to you. He says, and it's part of this searching that you're doing now is part of that whole thing. So you know, the feathers bring so many messages to us, and in so many different ways.
Feathers inside of a feather inside of a feather inside of a feather.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly your message that you're telling right now as well.
Yeah,
there's many messages that they're inside of every one of them.
Yeah, and actually, and here's another story of the feather, and this is true also. The production company that I was working with Oyate, a music group at the time, their production company was called One Feather Productions. which is even more bizarre. But yeah, and we were talking about, and that actually was a great album, because it was a very spiritual album. And we were talking in the beginning about the Creator's voice and all that. The story that you were talking about, I don't know, it was maybe before we even came on the air, was about another true story, about the girl,
in the wheelchair?
Yeah, well, she was in church though, and I was coming, went on my way to church, of course, I play the flute and on my walk to church, okay? And so, and I was walking down, you know, I was getting close to the church, but I was still playing, and she thought that she was hearing voice, she thought it was the voice of the Creator. You know, she was, you know, and then all of a sudden, of course, she saw me, and then everything, you know, came clear, but she came up after the service and told me that story, that she thought that, you know, she was sitting in church and she thought she was hearing the voice of the Creator, okay? And it was my flute off in the distance someplace, but I thought that was real cute. And
her stories, when you tell them and when I read them, I can, mm-hmm. It's like I fall in and I'm in the visions.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense to you? It's like
I think a lot of true stories especially are that way. Now, I do a lot of legends too, and I do fantasy and all that stuff, and some of them are, a lot of the things that a lot of people think are pure fantasy are actually true stories. And a lot of the things that a lot of things people think are true stories are in fact, you know, some of my own fantasies.
You ought to start putting a T and an F for true and false.
Yeah, true or false, right. But the true stories, especially what I found is true stories have a way of hitting home, of moving the person because of their reality. That reality, you know, it brings you to that reality, and then all of a sudden you realize that this is real. This is a real thing. Is this not something that somebody made up? This is actually an experience that somebody had.
Before we run out of time, you've got to tell about Ash Cave.
Oh, Ash Cave.
And
yeah,
how it amplifies, and how the preacher used to stand there, and I've got the deck that Raven sent me from there. Oh, and we've got to touch upon the Night Eagles. We've got to touch upon something. Okay,
go
with that one first. Go with the Ash Cave first.
Okay, Ash Cave, yeah. Okay, Ash Cave is in Ohio, and it's one of those places that is very, very spiritual. When I get to Ash Cave and I walk into it, it's like I can feel the spirits all around me that have been there for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And before I knew about what it was, before I had read anything about it historically or anything else, the minute I walked into that place, I looked at the cave. It's this huge cave. It kind of looks like the Hollywood Bowl. You know, it has that, you know, it just kind of opens up, and then it has a waterfall that hits right in the center of it. And
it's over the stones, right, where you stand?
I'm sorry, say again?
Does it have moss? Didn't Raven say there was moss, like, over the rock?
Yeah, there are some moss over the rock. But the cave itself is huge, and when you look at it, you think, oh, this... Or when I looked at it, I said to myself, oh, this is the gathering place. And
right.
I could feel all the spirits for that have been there for thousands of years.
Holding
then I actually read the history of the place. And it's the reason why they call it Ash Cave is because if you dig down right where the cave is, you'll find ashes all for like 75 feet down, which basically means that 4,000 to 10,000 years ago, there was people building fires there. And of course, you know who was building fires there. But nevertheless, and so when I play the Native American flute down there, it just sings and sings and sings. But
she told me
and it has the acoustics in it are
where
so
the
beautiful.
Preacher used to stand on the top.
Yeah,
and
they have a place called Creature Rock. The acoustics are so beautiful, and the acoustics are, because when you play the flute there, it's like a speaker cone, and it sends it all the way down the valley for 2 miles or something like that. But they have a place called Preacher's Rock when the Native Americans actually left, and Tecumseh used to speak there too, by the way. But the Baptists used to hold, and the local churches used to hold their meetings there.
Their revival.
And there was a great big rock that you can stand up, and it basically puts you in the center of that speaker cone, and you can hear your voice all over that cave. Mm-hmm. And so that's the pinnacle or the Preacher's Rock.
I've got a stone in each of my hand, one from inside mm-hmm. that Raven sent me, and one on the outside. And then there was some stones that she took a picture of that had the carvings around. Is that on the outside, right?
No, those are actually in the inside, and a lot of them have been, I hate to say this, but a lot of them have been damaged over the years by people who were carving their initials in and things like that, which is really sad. But nevertheless, that's, you know, the way people are.
But the
space itself is just a wonderful space. I mean, I go down there in the morning and play all day. Play the flute all day. Sit down there and play the flute all day. And it recharges my... And right...
It's like you just... One more minute.
Okay, well, I think we're kind of at the end here, right?
No, I mean, that's... No, I'm saying that's what you say to yourself before you leave.
Yeah. Well, actually, I thought you were saying we were running out
of
time.
No, I don't have a watch on me. You're going to have to tell me when it's right before 10 o'clock.
Okay. But anyway, I actually play until I'm just totally spent. And, and I do this many times before.
How many flutes do you take with you?
What? I take a whole bag of flutes. I have 20, 30.
How do you know which one? Do they speak to you and tell you, take me?
Yeah, they do. They say, you know, a lot of times, you know, people, you know, a lot of times, and when I pick them up and I play them, some of them just sing and sing and sing and sing, you know, and you know, people, and most of them were, most of the flutes.
I think you're right now, Loons in the Moonlight.
Yeah, and by the way, Loons in the Moonlight is done with the first gift flute that I ever received. And
Don, that's the first meditation and how I met you, too.
Yeah. It was and it's a wonderful,
oh,
and
it's
wonderful
so high
stories.
And high.
Mm-hmm.
Tell that story.
Well, there's a couple. Of course, all the songs have a number of different stories behind them, just like the feather and all that. But there's one story that is a true story. And as long as we're telling true stories tonight, I will tell true stories. This is a true story. I was teaching at a Catholic parochial school, and I was teaching music. And one of the sisters came down to me and on my lunch hour and said, "Could you come over to the Montessori school, which is like their preschool or kindergarten school, and play the flute on your lunch hour?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And I, of course, I always have a little Native American flute with me, and it just so happened that Loons in the Moonlight, it was done with a very, very high D, and that little D actually fits in your coat pocket. You can actually put it in your coat pocket. It's that small. And so I picked out my little high D and went over there and started playing for the kids, and I played and told my little stories and danced around, and they all had a good time, and they all laughed, and, you know, we had a good time. But on my way out, I noticed that there was one little boy that was being held by one of the sisters, and he was kind of drooling on himself. So on my way out, I was dancing my way out, so I danced down by him and kind of danced around him and got down on my knees and played, you know, and did a few things and just kind of played, you know, it was kind of funny, just, you know, and had a good time. And then I spun around and twirled around and danced my way out of the hall. And I didn't think too much about it and went back to class, taught the rest of the day. And at the end of the day, when I'm packing up my books and putting everything away, the sister who was holding the little boy came up to me and she said, "I think you're an angel." And I said, "Well, I can assure you, sister, that beyond shadow of a doubt, that I am in fact not an angel." And she says, "No," she says, "you don't understand. The little boy that I was holding today, he has cerebral palsy, and I haven't seen him smile in a month. Smiled for the first time in a month." And of course, every time I tell that story, I tear up because, you know, and I said,
just went and got the arrows when you told that story. You remember the arrows that I showed you and I said, took pictures of, and I said, "One day you'll get these arrows that the Native Americans made and we found."
Mm-hmm.
I believe. I don't know why I went and picked them up when you were telling that story. The broken arrows that are mended.
And that's one of the stories, and that's the song, and that's the flute that I was playing with Loons in the Moonlight, and that's
But also, there's a little boy that the woman comes and plays. Remember that one?
That's another lovely story, and that actually is an ancient legend that I was told, and then I kind of rewrote it and made it something that kind of spoke to me, but I tried to maintain some of its the original thrust of it, but I changed it slightly. Because it was a story about the flute, and that's
the reed flute, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a story that went like something like this. Late one night, there was a young brave that was awakened by the sound of a hauntingly beautiful voice. The enchanting voice called, and the brave followed the sound to the banks of the lake. As the mist rose off the surface of the water, he sat by the lake and listened to the mystical voice, dreaming of the beautiful lady singing the song that mesmerized him. He searched for her in the moonlight until the red sky of morning sun dried the dew on the grass and the melodies faded away. Every night he would awake in the middle of the night and go down to the lake and search in vain for the lady in the mist. He fell deeply in love with the soul whose mystical songs touched his heart and became very depressed that he could never find her. He was so sad that he became very sick. He would not eat. He could not sleep. And he lost his will to live. Close to death, he lay by the lake, still hoping to see his lady, when out of the mist appeared a figure singing a magic song. Although there was no words to the song, it told him that the Lady of the Mist had a gift for him, so that he would always have her voice with him to bring joy to his heart and console him when he was sad. She had a special present for him. When the figure approached him, she appeared to him as a majestic loon, gliding across the water towards him. She took a reed from the lake and placed it into his hand. It was transformed into a reed flute. With the music, wonderful, magical voice, and then she disappeared into the mist. The brave played the flute, and as it sang, out he became strong. The voice of the flute always brought him joy, but it not only brought him joy, it brought joy to everyone who heard it. The flute was not only just for consoling him, but it was for consoling others. And its magic voice was pure delight. As the first twilight in the morning mist broke, you can still hear the Lady of the Lake in the reed flute as it echoes across the water like loons in the moonlight. Anyway, that's Loons in the Moonlight.
And that's page 45, everyone, listening audience, of The Storyteller's Flute. You should get the book. I'm telling you, this is an amazing, wonderful book with give out your website, John. I know everyone would love to visit your website. Even though you are on the headlines, let's give it out anyway.
Well, there's actually, if you want to buy the book, that one's Skydancer on skydancer.com. And that are actually Skydancer Designs, okay? It's the whole thing. You got to put it Skydancer Designs, all one word, .com. And that'll take you to a place where you can get the book. And that's through the company that handles that. And then, of course, I have a space on MySpace where you can go and listen to the music for free. and also see some videos. There's some videos out there, and there's some animations.
A lot of YouTubes as well.
Yeah, a lot of people have used my songs and flute music. PBS has used on a special a couple of my songs and
I saw where someone asked the other day to use your songs for their movie.
Yeah, there's a couple of people right now who are actually talking to me about using them, three or four people who have used my songs for animations. For whatever reason, I'm an animator myself. I enjoy art and I enjoy, you know, making that sort of thing. So, you know, I enjoy that sort of thing. And I think that, I see a lot of visual stuff when I play the flute. And I think somehow they pick up on this, you know, because they seek me out, you know. It's like I don't go and, you know, present it to them. They seek me out. And so that's good. I mean, I love to see my work used with other people's work and have it, and you know, it's in certain pieces.
I remember when I met you, I had written a story to Loons in the Moonlight, but it was about like a birth, you know, and it was meditation, and it was a lot of healing that I was doing.
Well, the Loons have such a wonderful voice. I don't know if you've ever been out, you know, at with the Loons singing in the early morning.
It starts at the beginning of the song.
Yeah, there is. I mean, they have a wonderful voice, and that's another story if you want to get into that.
Golden Pond has the Loons. Remember that movie on Golden Pond?
I'm sorry. Say again.
Do you remember the movie on Golden Pond?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Loons started on that movie.
Yeah,
but tell me that story you were going to tell.
Well, you know, birds actually gifted us a lot of song, okay? I mean, you know, you don't think about it, but, you know, the early flute and early music itself, okay, you know, kind of came out of the songs of the birds. I mean the melody lines of the birds. I mean if you go back in any, you know, the Cherokee music as well, but I mean if you go back in any, you know, even the classical music, you go back and they all have songs about birds singing and the melodies lines of the birds and how beautiful voices, you know, that the birds have. And there's a wonderful story about this boy.
Is it Loons in the Moonlight in the background while we're talking about it?
And there's a wonderful story about a young boy who is visiting his grandfather, and his grandfather is Cherokee. And he's over at his grandfather's house in the summer. He stays there, you know, with his grandfather, and he's a very young boy, and you know how all young boys are very curious, and they start going through. And he went down into the basement, and he started taking things off of the shelf and looking at everything on the shelf, and pretty soon he started crawling up the shelf. The shelf was a very high shelf, and then finally he got clear to the top of the shelf, and And clear at in the very back at the top of the shelf, and he had to crawl up the shelf to get it. He pulls out this bag, and this bag is a really, really, really beautiful leather case. And he puts it down, and when he opens it up, there's three flutes in it, and they're just beautiful flutes with loons and birds on them. And so, you know, being, you know, a young boy, he takes it out and starts to blow on it. And when he blows on it, of course, it makes this really, really loud sound. And in about 3 seconds, his grandfather is standing at the top of the stairs of the basement. And he's thinking to himself, oh, I'm in trouble now. I got into it. And, you know, his grandfather came down the stairs. But much to his surprise, his grandfather looked at him and said, seeing as you found the flutes, you were obviously destined to play the flute.
Oh, my God.
And so he...
Was that you, John?
No, that was not me.
Oh.
That was a good friend of mine, by the way.
Was
and,
it?
But nevertheless, and so he said, so he taught him how to play the flute. And he taught him how to play the flute, and so he taught him song after song after song, and then pretty soon one day, that summer, he said, the little boy said, well, you know, you've taught me all these songs, Grandpa. He says, but where do the songs come from? And his grandfather said, well, tomorrow I'll show you where the songs come from. And so he went to sleep that night, and early the next morning, before the sun was even up, it was still dark, his grandfather came in and woke him up. He said, wake up, wake up. Come with me now. And so they walked out into the woods and down into the creek, and they were standing in the creek, and it was cold and it was morning, and all of a sudden the sun broke over the horizon, and when it did, all of a sudden he heard,
oh my God,
and he said, there's one, there's a song, and then another one. He said, oh, there's another song. And later on, that's a great story. But the little boy actually grew up to be an orchestra.
I feel like I'm just like right inside the story that's inside the feather that's inside the feather. Oh, my God.
And later on, this little boy actually grew up, and he thought, that was a wonderful story that my grandma, but he didn't think too much about it. He thought, oh, it's just a wonderful story that my grandfather told me and everything else like that. But when he grew up, he got his doctorate in music. And when he got his doctorate in music, he studied the history, and of course he was Cherokee too, and he studied the history of the different songs of the Cherokee. And what he found was the Cherokee were nomadic people. They moved in different places, and eventually they ended up out west after the government moved them, you know, clear out west. But what he found was the melody lines of the songs that the Cherokee sang very much resembled the birds that were in the area when they were in the east.
No kidding.
Yes, that's true. But it brings me back to the original statement, which was all societies have songs about birds, and they use the birds as examples of where the songs come from. And of course there's legend and after legend in the Native American culture about, you know, about how the Creator gives these beautiful, wonderful birds these wonderful melodies and for different things, to do different things, and how these melodies were so good for different people, and not only that, good for the birds.
I want to tell you about this one bird that comes to my house every Easter and flies in and shows himself after 5 years in a row. But we have a caller. Do you want to take a call? Okay, John, that's not a call. That means we're out of time.
Okay.
Okay, John. John DeBoer, everyone. Thank you so much, John, for being with us.
Hey, it was nice being here, and it was nice talking to you. And again, Kathy, thank you very, very much for the flowers and everything. I appreciate that. And you're just a wonderful person, Kathy. And I really, really enjoy you and your and the things that you say and the way you are as a person. And thank you very much for having me as a guest.
John, you're just a wonderful friend, and the feeling is mutual. And give my love to your wife, Raven. And with that, we're off the air.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.